Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Swish and Flick, an All Potter podcast.
Swish and Flick, everyone. Swish and Flick.
Hello and welcome to episode 308 of Swish and Flick. I'm Tiffany.
I'm Megan.
And I'm Katie.
And Lori Kim is here.
Hi. Woo! Woo-hoo. Welcome back.
Thank you.
Yeah. You just can't seem to stay away.
I can't.
I know. I love that for you and for us because it just, I don't know, makes our episode so much more fun. All right. This episode is sponsored by Carissa Clymer. Thanks, Carissa.
Thank you, Clarissa. I almost said Clarissa.
Okay. So I was getting ready to say, I almost said Clarissa, and I was wondering if you were going to explain all of this. And if you don't understand what I'm saying, are you too young to be here? I'm joking, you're not.
Clarissa, you go have look climbed up. Into my heart.
Oh, wow, Catherine.
That's cute.
Yeah, go look up Clarissa Explains It All if you don't know what
it's
we're talking
a good,
about.
It's a good one. Okay, you guys. So today we are going to be discussing part one of chapter 4 of Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows, The Seven Potters. So make sure that you have read the chapter and you're ready to dig your way through the details. Did I mean that? Was that last time's?
I don't know.
I don't know why I wrote that. Ding! I said ding!
Oh, maybe because it's seven.
Ah, dang. Well, I misread it. I said dig. Should I be here this evening?
No. Yes, always.
We're keeping this in. I said ding your way because it's the seven Potters as I'm reaching for
ding
this. We're prepared. Anyways, before we begin, I'm going to give it to Megan because I'm not allowed to talk anymore for a while until I can compose myself. So, Meg's Mousetails, please tell us about what is going on in the world of TV shows.
Actually, I was going to start out with the better news, which is we are officially, finally doing a meetup in the Cleveland area.
What?
I know. I'm so excited. We are partnering with Wall of Books in Parma, Ohio. It's going to be October 20th at 6:30, and we are going to have like a little mix and mingle with the the bookstore being open. She being the manager of Wall of Books, she's very kind. Her name is Teresa. Shout out to Teresa. She's going to kind of like pump up some of the Potter stuff that they have. She said she's going to decorate for us and make it all magical and pottery. And we're going to do a live podcast at Wall of Books. We're not entirely, we haven't nailed down a topic yet, but I think that we're going to maybe do a place again, kind of like a Felix Files, right?
Yeah.
Something like maybe. That. We'll come up with something.
I think we'll talk about books though at Wall of Books.
What if we do a Felix Files on Flourish and Blotts?
Ooh. I was thinking something spooky.
Oh, yeah, okay, because it is, like, 2 weekends before Halloween. Spooky.
We have a lot of options to do there.
Yeah. Well, we will nail it down. And also, there's going to be a Facebook event and an Eventbrite. It's not, doesn't cost anything to come. It's literally just to, like, count people that are going to, like, RSVP. And we're also going to do a raffle with some merch from Wall of Books and some Swish merch, and the proceeds of that raffle are going to go to Katie's American Cancer Society fundraiser. her official goal, first half marathon back into action.
First race
in January. In yes.
Yeah. You hear that, knee?
Cooperate. Do what you're supposed to.
So yeah, we hope to see as many of you as we can on October 20th in Parma at Wall of Books.
Woo-woo!
And now for some Wizarding World news. There was a little update on the TV show. There was an interview being done with David Heyman, and he said that writing hasn't even started yet, which I think is kind of weird that they would have made this like big deal of an announcement and then like not got to work. But
it's
okay.
I don't know. They're going for the jugular here with every little post because they know people are going to be ravenous.
It's just weird.
Can they write right now? That's totally different.
But no,
there's a strike, so
right.
But like they announced,
I don't think anybody wrote anything
way before the strike.
Yeah, but I don't necessarily think that. Well, I guess I really don't know how it works, but I would imagine nothing has started, even back when
they
announced.
That's what he made it sound like. But like, I'm thinking, I'm used to like Universal Studios when they announce something, they've been working on it for months, sometimes years.
Yeah,
and AKA then they're just like, Epic Universe. They still have not officially announced what the worlds are, but they've been working on it since before COVID. So, like, it's just kind of weird that they would announce a show and then not have done anything prior to the announcement. Like, not even have an idea. Like, do they have an idea of what it's going to be? I don't know. Obviously, we know that there's a strike.
I mean, they have the book, so.
Right. Yeah, we know there's a strike going on. We support the strike. I just thought that that was kind of weird.
The writer,
I know,
shows
that
up
a
with
lot
the book,
of people
script's done.
Seriously though, I mean it is there. It's there. I know, like Stephanie in the chat said, animated with some little eyeballs.
I hope so.
I know a lot of other people had been calling for animated. You clearly want. I don't want animated.
You don't?
No.
I think it would be.
I don't. I want it to be gritty, like it should be in the end. And I don't want to see that in an animated film, not film. TV
I could
show.
Go for either, if I'm being honest. The reason why I think that I would dig an animated version, you know, I was actually thinking more so what I want to be animated is A Court of Thorns and Roses. I think that would be really good animated.
Maybe that more so only because of like, I don't know how you're going to make Bat Boys look, but I don't know. I want it to be just as good as like Rings of Power looked. Like Rings of Power is so stinking amazing. And like if they could do it on that level, I would be happy as a pig in mud.
Mm. Well.
But I'm obviously going to, I'm going to watch whatever they're going to put out there, but I will.
We'll see.
We shall. It's not up to us.
Unfortunately.
They never called.
Right?
I don't know why. I have my phone on me.
All the time.
All the time.
Anyway.
Okay.
Make sure that you follow us on your preferred podcast listening platform and share this episode with your friends, because if you like us, then they will too. Subscribe. It's a fact. Subscribe to our channel on YouTube at Swish and Flick Podcast and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok at Swish Flick Cast. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, head on over to patreon.com/Swish Flick Cast. Supporting our podcast keeps us going and it gives you access to our exclusive Felix Files episodes, our Discord channel, live recordings, trivia games, Swish swag boxes, and more. Thank you all so much for your support. As always, we are accepting Potter stories to our email, which is swishflickcast@gmail.com.
Katie.
Tiffany.
I've been hearing this song constantly because Marty and Alana keep singing it, and so does Miss Rachel. Have you heard of the song, Have You Seen the Ghost of John?
No.
Really?
Really?
I had neither, though, so I don't know why I sound so surprised.
Really?
Have you heard the recap? Catherine's telling and it won't be sad. I don't know.
Sounds like church.
It sounds like church. It's some kid's song. I don't know. Has Discord heard of it?
Have you seen The Ghost of John?
I don't know.
Well, until like maybe a couple years ago, I hadn't heard Dominic the Donkey for like holiday times.
Oh my God. Don't even I don't know bring what that, that is. Freaking song up.
It's terrible. But also like quirky, you know.
Okay.
Anyway, church recap. So Dudley doesn't think Harry's a waste of space. How
I feel like
sweet.
I've talked about that.
Huh?
I said I feel like we've talked about that a lot.
Yeah. That's basically a big old I love you from Dudley. And he is the reason why his parents end up deciding to go with the Order. Who knew that Dudley would be the hero? Hestia is another example of why the Wizarding World not knowing or understanding just how little Harry's relatives care about him in general and what he means to the whole Wizarding World. She's not here for it. She gets pretty upset, and Harry's like, it's fine, I'm used to it. And Petunia has a chance to say something meaningful to Harry, and she doesn't. So, hashtag unredeemable.
Truly.
Meg, give me that summary. You wrote one?
Yeah.
So proud of you.
I wrote one for both episodes that we're recording tonight.
Wow.
I know. I even tapped my jokes.
I finished my notes at 4:21 p.m. today.
High five.
I'm sorry. Are you killing it today? I think so.
Harry is feeling slightly nostalgic at the start of this chapter. We get some callbacks to previous books, and then everyone appears from under disillusionment charms. We learn why the original plan was scrapped and what the new plan is. There will be 7 Harry Potters flying through the sky tonight.
Sorry. That wasn't a very good bell. Here we
ding,
go.
Da, ding, ding, ding.
My little tabby's got in the way. Got stuck. Well, I feel like this is a big moment because now's where the fun starts. / sadness. So this chapter is going to mark the first, like, very significant to Harry himself, like, deaths of this book. And the lovely Catherine gets to cover the first.
Yay. Not this episode, though.
Next step.
That's for next time. But honestly, like, this is a big deal. So buckle up, guys, because here's where the poop hits the fan. So Harry, the goodbyes are done, right? He's back up in his bedroom, and he gets one last look at the Dursleys leaving. And I like this because it's like, the author didn't have to write this again. The Dursleys left. She didn't have to put this in. But I think it's like a really powerful moment for Harry because he does get like the actual last look for what he thinks that could be forever. And it's Aunt Petunia and Dudley in the back seat. And in between them is only Daedalus's top hat visible because he's that small. And that's it. They turn right at the end of Privet Drive, and they peace out, Girl Scout. And the windows, as they're turning, turn scarlet with the sunset. And I thought that was interesting because I looked up the color red, and it says, scarlet red and other vibrant reds are the colors most associated with courage, strength, heat, and joy. Scarlet has always been associated with power, money, elegance. As people of higher status in ancient Rome wore scarlet colored cloaks. And I think that it's also interesting. I did look it up. Another source said that red equals sacrifice, danger, and courage, like I said before. And scarlet is mentioned several times in the Bible as well. And cardinals in the Catholic Church used to wear large red garments because the scarlet Bible meaning means the blood of Jesus Christ and the Christian martyrs. So I just thought that that was kind of interesting. Like, it does take sacrifice for the Dursleys to leave. Granted, they're going to safety, but they are sacrificing things within their own lives. They are in danger, and it is a little bit courageous of them in their own eyes to go with, I don't know, I guess people they hate, people they don't trust. So if you look at it through their lens, those words kind of make sense for this sunset blasting off the car windows.
Would you say that it was so scarlet it was maroon?
Probably. It's Taylor what? Swift.
Reference. Tiffany, get on board, all right?
What's wrong with you?
You know, it would help a lot if you, like, listened to Midnights more than
I
once.
I did once. Once.
I listened to it one time.
Remember when you kicked me out of a Zoom and couldn't let me back in because I didn't listen to Midnights?
Yeah.
I'm in.
I have no regrets. Okay.
I love you. Oh, we get a little bit of some throwback. So Harry picks up Hedwig's cage, his fire bolt, and his rucksack. And we get shout outs to books like 3 through 6 with this. Hedwig's cage is obviously like book one. And I just think that's pretty cool. I mean, he's like, those are the important things, right? I mean, he's got his rucksack full of stuff, but Hedwig's cage, firebolt, rucksack.
And he's think about the things that are in the rucksack.
He needs
too.
Very little. Yeah.
Like the things he deemed.
He's looking at his bedroom and he's like, oh my gosh, it's never looked like this before. It's super tidy. The sun is going down very quickly. And Harry goes through kind of a memory lane, if you will. He thinks about how strange it is to be sitting here in silence, knowing that he's going to be leaving number 4 Privet Drive for the very last time. Quote, long ago, when he had been left alone while the Dursleys went out to enjoy themselves, the hours of solitude had been a rare treat. Pausing only to sneak something tasty from the fridge, he had rushed upstairs to play on Dudley's computer or put on the television and flick through the channels to his heart's content. It gave him an odd, empty feeling to remember those times. It was like remembering a younger brother whom he had lost.
Oof.
And I know. I think that it's true for us, too, as readers. Like, that's not the same man who's leaving Privet Drive.
So we've got... Oh, we've got Harry saying goodbye to his younger self. That line.
Yeah.
That was one of the times that I thought, oh, this feeling of reading Deathly Hallows the first time and then rereading it, it's really different from rereading the other books. There's this strong sense of farewell from the beginning. There's this momentous feeling like, okay, the blood-colored sun is setting on childhood safety. And then it goes, the light is fading rapidly now. Wow, okay, this is no more safety. It's gonna start now, the danger, and it's not going to stop. So in Prisoner of Azkaban, the time travel sense, it was going backwards into the past. So there's this double awareness. You get the time turner and you have the self in the present looking at the self from the past. This time it's about going into the unknown, facing it, and you just don't know what's there. So I thought, okay, that's what Harry's doing. He's internalizing his earlier self to sort of take that kid with him. You have to do that if you're going to try to counteract the sense of loss, because it's pretty overwhelming here. Oof.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a lot. It's a lot. And we as readers, we remember that too, right? We're remembering these things with Harry. We started out and with the small boy who slept in the cupboard under the stairs and who was afraid. And we've watched him and grown with him to the man and hero that he is, like, in the present time of this book.
I remember going through this chapter the first time and, like, it, I mean, obviously, as we go through this chapter further, it gets sadder. But, like, the beginning of this chapter felt very much like a hug to me. Like, it was nice to find happy memories and moments in this place that brought Harry so much sadness, but like he was able to pull some happiness from it and like enough to feel nostalgic and reminiscent on some of the things he went through.
Definitely helped him, like, not necessarily, I don't know if appreciate is the right word, but like appreciate the journey that he went through and who he is now. And it, this reminded me of, there's artwork out in the universe on the internet highway of Harry in an oversized flannel shirt and pants holding the hand of grown Harry. God. Stop. I don't know. Have you guys seen that?
I haven't.
I don't know. Find it. Yeah, if anybody can find that, it's really cute.
Wow.
It's really cute. I saw it a long time ago, and it was very moving because just the oversized clothes and it, just everything, and then holding the hand of, like, his grown self. I'm like, oh, my God. I love it.
What originally came up was... Oh, like God. Prince Harry.
That's what happened to me too.
Because I didn't put Potter. I was like, oh, Google will know what I'm talking about. No.
Google reads my mind, right? Yeah.
Can I say something that comes way, way later in this book? Or is it better to save it?
Yeah. If you need to. No. Go ahead. If you feel like you want to say
there's
now,
a time in the Prince's Tale chapter when Harry is viewing Snape's memories. Mm-hmm. And he essentially does that for 11-year-old Snape when he's watching the memories of the sorting of the year that Snape and Lily got sorted. He gets up and he walks with Snape to the stool, to the sorting hat. Like, by the time, this is the beginning of this book, and he's experiencing that feeling. And by the end of this book, he knows how to do that for people. Like, even within this one volume, he grows.
So good.
Then there's this sentence.
He is so good.
Harry lost the thread of his thoughts for a moment and Hedwig did nothing to help him retrieve it. That was another thing that I noticed about how the writing in this volume changed without any announcement. It's just sort of moments where you realize she's writing an adult novel now. That's an extended, complex metaphor, like the one in the previous chapter that said the distant echo of Hagrid smashing down a wooden door seem to reverberate through the intervening years. That's something that she wouldn't have done in a younger volume. And here it seems like she's saying, I'm not apologizing. You're not a child anymore either, reader.
Yeah. Figure this out in your English class. No, I really like that because it is. I mean, the books do turn, obviously, with, I feel like Goblet very much takes a turn, but like Seven, I feel like really genuinely just like flips. And it's like you said, I'm not apologizing anymore. This is a grown up situation and this is where we're at. We're not in school anymore, kids. Like, you don't have protection and neither does the reader, because we're going to rip your heart out. Here we go. All right. Harry says, quote, don't you want to take a last look at the place? He asked Hedwig, who was still sulking with her head under her wing. We'll never be here again. Don't you want to remember all the good times? I mean, look at this doormat. What memories? Dudley puked on it after I saved him from the Dementors. Turns out he was grateful after all. Can you believe it? And last summer, Dumbledore walked through that door. Okay. We have throwbacks to Order. We have throwbacks to Half-Blood. He's really going for closure here. I think it's going to bring him peace when he leaves, because I do believe that the Dursleys were only mentioned a couple more times in this book. And it's almost in passing, but they're so ingrained within, I don't know, his heart and who he is. They do crop up later in this book. This is not the last mention of them. But it feels like he is really going for, like, I have to close the chapter on this because I'm not coming back and I can't expect to. Not that he really would want to anyway. And the last time that he thinks about the Dursleys in Deathly Hallows is when he is camping with Hermione in their Dick's Sporting Goods commercial for 20,000 years.
My dad would be so proud of you.
I did it for your dad.
And he asks her if they can go to Godric's Hollow. And he says, quote, he felt exactly as he had done on the occasion several years previously when he had asked Professor McGonagall whether he could go into Hogsmeade, despite the fact that he had not persuaded the Dursleys to sign his permission slip. So that's the last mention of them ever in this book. In this series. I don't know if they're mentioned in Cursed Child. I didn't go that far.
Yeah, they are.
Okay. I don't remember, but I believe you. So he's lost in his thoughts. And he thinks of Dumbledore, and Hedwig continues to sit with her head under her wing. And he says, quote, and under here, Hedwig, Harry pulled open a door under the stairs, is where I used to sleep. You never knew me then. Blimey, it's small. I'd forgotten. And that makes me so emotional. The little spiders, the top of the steps adorned with spiders, and it's like a well-known picture spot at any of these like recreations and things that go along like all over the country, mm-hmm. where you can go and you can sit there. The cupboard under the stairs is so ingrained in mm-hmm. pop culture that people will call it, oh, you have a Harry Potter spot under your stairs. Yes. I remember saying that when my aunt built a house. She built that and made it a little tiny playroom for her kids. And I said, oh my gosh, you have Harry Potter stairs, right? And it's synonymous with that. People, you can't see, that's how popular this series is. You can't see a spot under the stairs without thinking of Harry Potter.
Yeah.
I think that's so cool.
I would love a cupboard under the stairs.
Mm-hmm. We have one in the basement if you want to just like hang out in there. I'm sure it's adorned with spiders.
My parents have one in the basement and I will not be stepping foot in that.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. I pulled a quote from, I think it was probably Sorcerer's Stone. Quote, Harry got slowly out of bed and started looking for socks. There's socks. He found a pair under his bed and after pulling a spider off one of them, put them on. Harry was used to spiders because the cupboard under the stairs was full of them. And that's where he slept. And that's where we were first introduced to the cupboard under the stairs. So you have the last mention and the first mention there.
You're welcome. Better hope you're used to spiders because you're going to fight a gigantic one in a couple years.
Oh, I thought you were talking about like.
I was like,
Hallows,
yeah, they are like, in the battle, but I don't know if he like one on one fights. Oh my gosh. So I couldn't like paraphrase. I had to like go with this really honestly because it's just so chock full of memory. So I'm directly quoting again. Harry looks around at the stacked shoes and umbrellas, remembering how he used to wake every morning looking at the underside of the staircase, which was more often than not adorned with a spider or two. Those had been the days before he had known anything about his true identity, before he had found out how his parents had died or why such strange things often happened around him. But Harry could still remember the dreams that dogged him, even in those days. Confused dreams involving flashes of green light. And once Uncle Vernon had nearly crashed the car when he recounted it, a flying motorbike. Interesting words. Crash the car, which is how they told Harry that his parents died. I was thinking about, obviously, flashes of green light, James and Lily. And then the flying motorbike. I immediately thought, well, that Hagrid, right? But oh, nay, nay, it could be two things. Could be Hagrid bringing him to Privet Drive, or it could have been Sirius showing up at Godric's Hollow.
Stop.
Oh, right, because he got there before Hagrid, right?
That's how we found out.
I can't emotionally handle that. Thanks.
Yeah. Sorry.
It could also be like any time that maybe Sirius showed up to visit Harry. Uncle Sirius.
It could be. It could be. I don't know how often he was able to visit given that they were in hiding for so long.
Yeah, true.
And so, yeah, so the immediate thought that I had, and I think what I've always thought for years is Hagrid, you know, bringing him to the Dursleys. But I was like, it could be Sirius, too, showing up at Godric's Hollow to pass over the bike. And speaking of Sirius's bike, he hears a deafening roar from somewhere nearby. He jumps up and he smacks his head on the low-hanging door frame. I feel like that's not the first time.
It happens every volume. At the beginning, when he's in the Dursley's house, he bangs his head or he
smacks his
hurts his foot or something. And I always wondered, what is that saying? And this time I thought, oh, maybe it's because he doesn't really belong in this world. So he doesn't quite fit. He keeps banging. I don't know. But yeah, I still have to figure that one out.
That's interesting. No, I like that. I like that. He doesn't quite fit.
It does happen in every book,
though. Smash his way out. The Chamber of Secrets one makes me hurt. The window, when he's hiding under the window with the bush. That one, the way that's described, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
Because if you've ever hit your head like that before, it's like, dang. All right, guys. So the darkness starts to ripple around them, right? And people start winnowing in. No, I'm just kidding.
I was going
to
say reset.
Crossover. We also have another podcast about A Court of Thorns and Roses series called A Court of Swish and Flick. Go listen. Anyways. this is the disillusionment charms lifting, and Harry's crew is now arriving. Hagrid is on Sirius's new bikes with some new bike accessories, right? It's not a new bike. It's got some new accessories. And there's also some Thestrals there, too.
And there's no question now. Everyone can see the Thestrals now. And that's another thing that happens to real-life trauma survivors when they hit around Harry's age. At first, when you're a little kid, you go through stuff that no other kid your age has gone through. And then as you get older and you reach adulthood, your peers start to catch up. Experience starts to catch up. They start to understand things that you faced too early.
So do you think that everybody in the room can see Thestrals? Or just, you mean the trio?
I think...
Because I was thinking about this today as I was listening, and I'm like, I don't know Fleur's background, but I know she didn't see Cedric die.
I think, yeah, by the...
But I was thinking...
By this time, can she... between... Cedric and then Dumbledore dying, I think just the understanding of death and the kind of risk that they're all gonna have to go through, sort of like, no, we're all adults here.
Okay. I just thought about that today on my drive while I was listening. And I really like this because this is a massive throwback to Chamber of Secrets. Hermione greets him by flinging her arms around him in a massive hug. And that's just, I like that. Chamber of Secrets feel, also Sorcerer's Stone feel. Ron is there too and greets him with a clap on the back. So Ron. Very Ron.
Yeah, so much.
And Hagrid asks him, all right, Harry, ready for the off?
That was awesome.
And Harry's just like, yeah, why are you all here, though? Harry is so confused.
Good to see you. What the heck are you doing?
So that's literally, like, what he says at that moment is, like, yeah, I'm ready, but I wasn't expecting all of you. And Mad-Eye is just, you know, he's Mad-Eye. He wants to get undercover inside before they talk, but there's a change of plan, so... They get all inside, and this is when we see who has come. So we have Ron and Hermione, Fred and George, Bill, Mr. Weasley, Mad-Eye, Tonks, Lupin, Fleur, Kingsley, Hagrid, and Mundungus.
I love...
Oh, how many is it, Megan?
13, right? Not counting Harry.
Yeah.
So 14, counting Harry. But
can we talk about Tonks's hair?
Oh yeah, it is. Let's see. It's described as her hair is back to being short and in her favorite shade of bright pink. Though Lupin is grayer.
She's very happy, though.
Yes.
And I like Hermione's hair here.
She's very happy.
Her bushy hair is tied back in a long plait. It's our first time seeing her hair braided. Yeah. And that actually helped me picture her as black. Like, okay, she's flying on a Thestral. Mm. You have to do something with all the hair. But then I had this odd feeling right after that because Kingsley is described as bald, black, broad-shouldered. Oh, and he's the only one out of these people described by their race. And that's textbook tokenism. But but it is one of those examples of, you know, when this author is trying to write race, it doesn't work. But when she's not trying to write race, it works really beautifully.
God, you're
right. It made me feel like, I don't know. Tokenism. 100%.
So I'm sticking with Hermione's hair being braided. Like, okay, there she goes.
Yeah. Like it. I'm in.
Okay. So this is now when we get the lowdown. A little bit of lowdown on some people. Go ahead, Tiff.
As I'm flipping through my book, I see little notes that I had from before. Do you want to hear something really cool?
Yes.
Of course.
The number 14 means new beginnings. Stop.
Wasn't there new also
beginnings of sadness?
Some sort of
the first to rise when you're dining with 13. Yes.
Yeah.
They ain't eating.
True.
They ain't eating.
But the first one that Harry talks to is Mad-Eye, right? Isn't he the first one to talk?
Is he? Or does it talk?
No, like, it's
Watcher
not.
Harry?
Or is
no,
it,
it's Hagrid.
Hagrid. That's Hagrid. Yeah, it's okay, Hagrid. Never mind. Nix that.
He's still thriving. Oh, they do turn to 13 after Mundungus bounces and then immediately Mad-Eye dies. Good spot, husband.
So
it's 12. Sorry. Tasha said it's 12 when 12 dine. Is it 12?
When 12 are dining the wait.
Wait, what are you guys talking about in this chat?
What's the phrase? Hold now on. It happens at the Christmas thing, right?
Yes, when 13 dine. 13, right? It's what are we talking about?
Because 13 is supposed to be unlucky, but we all know Taylor Swift.
It turns to 13. Does Hedwig count as a person?
No.
Okay. Just asking. I know she's an animal.
I mean, like, I always want to include animals as people, but, like, I don't think that it technically applies.
It's 13.
All right. So Harry sees Kingsley and is like, hey, I thought you were looking after the Muggle Prime Minister. And Kingsley's like, oh, he can get along without me for one night. You're more important. And then we get a little update from Tonks and Remus. So Tonks is ecstatic. She shows off her ring. Her and Remus have gotten married. And Harry, like, yelps with excitement. He's like, you got married. And then Lupin says, I'm sorry you couldn't be there, Harry. It was very quiet.
Who was there? Parentals?
I would assume they maybe even just one person for a witness. Like, they just, like, wanted to do it. But it's not really safe to do a big thing.
Yeah.
So Moody.
It's like COVID weddings.
Right. Sorry. No, yeah. So Moody hushes them all down and is basically like, come on, we've got to get to business. Cozy catch up later. And
no.
Right? I'm like, Moody, you should have listened. Because now
I told you that I have things to say about this chapter.
No, I love it.
Okay. I feel like I'm interrupting you because the lag is so bad. Ugh.
No, you're fine.
Okay.
So I'm just going to read what he says regarding this plan.
Yeah. Yeah.
As Daedalus probably told you, we had to abandon plan A. Pious Thickness has gone over, which gives us a big problem. He's made it an imprisonable offense to connect this house to the flu network, place a port key here, or apparate in or out. All done in the name of your protection to prevent you-know-who getting in at you. Absolutely pointless, seeing as your mother's charm does that already. What he's really done is to stop you getting out of here safely. Second problem, you're underage, which means you've still got the trace on you. So, obviously, Voldemort knows about the protection to some point, correct? So this is a 100% like a diversion to force Harry out into the open.
Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely. I have things. Okay. I want to make note of the fact that Moody calls Voldemort you-know-who.
Yeah.
I think that's really interesting. Is this the first time the trace is named?
Yeah.
The trace?
Yeah.
Okay. Because we obviously know about the trace, but we didn't know it had like a name. And it is literally the Trace University.
And like Trace is capitalized.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then I'm thinking about this protection because Harry doesn't lose his mother's protection. Harry loses Dumbledore's protection over Privet Drive.
Like the extension of the protection is what he loses.
And they don't know that.
Right.
So close to the vest, right? No, so many secrets. I said another secret.
Yeah.
Another secret. Which.
That's a good, I think deep down I knew that, but like I had never like voiced that.
You think about it, it's like. When you've read this book before, he talks even in the end when he's circling with Voldemort at the end of, you know, the whole battle. And he talks about like his mother's protection, but he never loses that. But everybody thinks that it's all connected to Privet Drive.
Right.
Because, I mean, Moody says it. Because the moment you turn 17, you'll lose all the protection your mother gave you. Well, no, he'll lose the protection that Dumbledore gave him. So whatever magic he magicked, that's gone.
Well, and also I think that is making a lot of assumptions because, like, how much do people even truly know about the love protection? You know what I mean? Like, is it certain written in books that it ends at age 17?
I don't know how common this is. Feels like almost like a one-off, much like Harry's whole entire life. His wand is a one-off. He's sticking Horcrux. Like, who's that?
Right.
So it's just, it's interesting.
Well, there's...
It's just there's really interesting. There's something
else that it makes me think of that happens. I think it's the next chapter, if that's all right to bring up. There's... something about feeling more protected when you're a kid from what your parents did. And there is definitely something about turning 17 where, okay, you're now no longer young enough to need adults to take care of you. You're now old enough to move out on your own. But Harry gets a new protection when he goes to the Burrow and Ginny, they're not supposed to be dating, but Ginny kisses him. And that kiss is described as a kiss like they'd never had before, which is kind of weird because they've had some time together. Right. And then I thought, oh, that's his new protection. Because then he's, you know, then it's the thought of Ginny that sustains him after that, since he's not a kid anymore. And then at the end of Deathly Hallows, when he's giving up his life, it's the last thing he imagines is Ginny. So,
hadn't thought of that before.
It's just his like thoughts have switched to something different,
and that's and that kiss comes right. You know, there's just a little time between the time he turns 17 and when Jenny kisses him, and that kiss is done so symbolically, and Ron is really annoyed.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful, fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
So I thought, oh, okay, that's when you're really just an adult, there's only so much you can take comfort of, you know, from, oh, a long time ago I was protected, because the stuff coming at you is so much harsher.
Yeah. I'm going into the chat because there's a lot of talk about like the protection and Lily Lily's blood running through Harry and whatnot. And it makes me also think of what was in the Howler, right? Mm. Remember my last.
It's Petunia. Petunia. Yeah.
I think that he probably told her. She may have been the only person to know about the magic within. Like, I told you that I did this spell to keep Harry safe, that you were to treat him as your own, right? And that's what was going to make this magic work, and you didn't do it. You blew it, right? Like, I wonder if she was the only one who knew that Dumbledore did all this stuff, because I don't know. I feel like all Harry almost doesn't know that Dumbledore did some kind of stuff. Like, because he doesn't say otherwise. Am I wrong? Am I wrong in that?
I think you're right that...
I don't know. I would trust
I think
you.
You're right that there's specific things Dumbledore did that Harry didn't understand. And that we see that playing out later in this chapter.
I don't think that Dumbledore ever would have told him that he... I mean, the only thing Dumbledore said
to the house.
The only thing Dumbledore said was that he had to return.
I think that's because that's maybe what kept this spell going. And then, you know, they kick him out. He's like, sends her the Howler, be like, I told you in the dang letter that was with the 1 year old that you were supposed to do this in order for this magic to work. Take him back in. Oof. Right?
Mm hmm.
I feel like she's probably the only one. I don't. Hell. excuse me. Sorry. I don't even know. Did Vernon know it all? Because I feel like she doesn't share the magic stuff with him.
No way. Yeah,
so only only I feel like only she would be like, oh, he's serious about this. And then Vernon's the one that kicks
threatens
him out, right?
To, and she says, we can't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she has to pull back and be like, actually, no. So she does bare minimum to keep him alive. Thanks.
So it seems thanks, like Petunia. This is where I should go into my big rant about this protection. Yeah.
I mean, if you feel the vibes in the room, vibes. Do it, Lori.
So have I talked on this podcast about the nature of the protection and why Dumbledore drew from it to shield the Dursley home? I haven't, right?
I don't think so.
So, oh God, I love that line. You and your aunt and uncle are going your separate ways tonight in the full understanding that you're never going to live together again. So what Dumbledore was instilling in Harry, Harry did not get the sense that the Dursleys were treating him as a child to protect, but he was instilling in Harry the constant awareness that somebody had thought of him as their child to protect and had wanted to. And that's the connection that Harry is craving more than anything in the world in life. He wants his own story. He wants his own origin story, which is something that I struggled with this series for a long time, because I always felt really uneasy when Dumbledore said, I put my trust in your mother's blood, because I really was rejecting the idea that there's something that biological family is that adoptive and chosen family can't be. Like, I didn't want it to be like, well, blood is better. But then I thought, no, there is something different happening here, though, which is true. When there's something about your origin story and the stories out there in the world, other people know it and they're keeping it from you. You're hungry to know it. That's yours. That's your birthright. And Dumbledore is keeping Harry connected to it through knowing that this connection through Petunia, it's pointed to something that used to be there. And Voldemort doesn't have that. Tom Riddle didn't have that. He had the same hunger for his birthright and his origin story, but he doesn't have a connection to it. That's the difference between Tom Riddle and Harry when they're thinking about their origins. Mm. And of course, Voldemort was just as hungry for his own origin story, and he went looking for it. And what he found was so disappointing and unbearable, unacceptable.
He killed it. He killed his origin
story. His father's family.
Literally snuffed
them
out.
In order to make his life livable in his own head, he invented this other origin story for himself that was more mythical. You know, that he comes from Slytherin and therefore he deserves to have Slytherin, and he deserves, in fact, all of Hogwarts, to as a, like a consolation prize, because that's what it takes to overcome that devastation, that you were never somebody's child that they wanted to protect. That is so intolerable and so fundamental that he had to make himself superhuman so that he could think he was beyond jealousy of this completely ordinary feeling that infants are born with. Ordinary people who have motherly love. And that, you know, how could he live with that feeling? It was so huge and so intolerable. And Tiffany, you have your hand up.
Oh, yeah, I do. I was just thinking of somebody else who squashed their own origin story and changed it for the view of the public. One Dolores Jane Umbridge.
And Barty Crouch Jr. chose a different father.
Barty Crouch.
And
then Barty Crouch Sr. disowned
and got
his son. Yeah. Not his origin story, his
offspring
story. And
then got
story.
Buried in the Niffler patch.
Do you think they dug that up?
I think they left it. But so then Voldemort hears this prophecy that there's going to be a baby born that's going to have the power to vanquish the Dark Lord. And that's, of course, frightening, but it's also a hope. Does that mean that there's finally somebody that's going to have an answer that's more satisfying for him? And so he had to think about which baby is it going to be, and he chose the one that's more similar to himself, and that's the first time that Tom Riddle identified with another human being in his life. And that was enough for him to have an experience of empathy, which is what would have killed him. When he orphans Harry, and then Harry's crying, and he has empathy for this crying baby, and then this jealousy that Harry had been loved by his very recently killed mother, that jealousy is the pain that was so great that if Tom Riddle had still been mortal, it would have killed him. But now he's tampered with his own nature so that he can endure greater degrees of pain than humans can. And he has closed off his own exit. So he's now doomed to this weird life where there's no limit to how much pain he can feel. And the only chance he has of limiting this pain and getting it to stop is to find Harry Potter. Like, you know, for the rest of his life, he has to go find Harry Potter. Like, can you make this pain stop either by letting me kill you or, I don't know, by telling me something I don't know?
Ellie, hold on to listen.
Because that's all he wants, right? He wants Harry to tell him something. Tell me something I don't know yet.
He wants, That'll
make this pain stop.
He wants to know
why.
Yeah.
And then, so he chases down this poor kid who can't get away from him. But every time he goes to Harry's family home, no matter how abusive the Dursleys were, entering that space was a reminder to Voldemort and to Harry that somebody once loved Harry. And that is that mortal degree of jealousy that Voldemort can't endure. That's why when he touches Harry and Harry thinks about Sirius and how much he misses Sirius, that Voldemort has to drop him. He has to run. He can't handle it. And that's also why when Quirrell touches Harry, he just burns up. Dursleys recognized Harry as kin. And Dumbledore realized that Voldemort couldn't stand touching that. And that's what it meant in my mind, finally, to think that's what Dumbledore is putting his faith in blood magic. And that's a hard thing to face, thinking about when you're someone raised not by your biological parents. What does that mean? You know, how can you identify the need for your own story that's separate from the people who actually love you and take care of you all the time?
Well, I feel like maybe if we think about, different types of families, like, your love we could say, runs through your veins. So whether it's not the same DNA love, you could still possibly take somebody's blood who loves another that's not their same, you know, genetic makeup, and it would still be the same.
True, and, which is, like, yeah, and Sirius's love in Harry's veins does that too. And but this protection of, you know, people who raised you, that is a protection that wanes in power when you get old enough to live on your own. Because that was the question, is Harry is still a child. Is somebody going to raise him, let them into their home? You know, and why? Mm-hmm. And yeah, until he turns 17, yes, there is somebody, and that's why. But now he's 17, and yeah, it's, he's going to need other protections now.
Yeah. I mean, he gets them from various people in his life. Megan, where were you?
I actually, that was the very end. It's Katie's turn.
Oh my God. Oh. Good job. Yeah. That was way to go.
It's the Lori show. No, I'm just kidding. Lori, look at her. Well, don't you feel Lori, bad. No, don't feel bad.
No.
This is why you're here.
The only thing left that I was going to say was that, like, Moody reiterated again that, like, Pious Thickness thinks he's got Harry cornered. Quote, good and proper.
Good and cornered. Yeah, good and proper. Sucks the suck, Pious.
Right?
I don't know how I'm going to follow up Lori, but here we go.
Yeah, good luck.
Okay. So Harry's like, so what are we going to do? And Mad-Eye explains they're going to use the only transport left that doesn't require them to use spells that the Trace University can't detect, right?
Yeah.
Brooms, Thestrals, and Hagrid's motorbike. So Harry instantly sees many flaws, but in very un-Harry fashion, he holds his tongue and allows Mad-Eye to go ahead and hash it out first before he's like, what about, you know, A through Z?
What about the fact that there's an army of us
here? Right. So let's do some explaining. So Mad-Eye says, your mother's charm is only going to break under two conditions. Well, and as Tiffany pointed out, really, it's also Dumbledore's charm, right?
Right.
So Harry comes of age, or he no longer calls number four Privet Drive home. So Harry and the Dursleys went their separate ways tonight, quote, in full understanding that you're never going to live together again. So this time when he leaves, there's no going back, and the charm will break once he is out of range. That has to feel, like, so good and yet so weird. Mm. Like, knowing you're never... he phrases live together, but Harry's probably thinking, I'm never going to see them again.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And that has to be, like... good, but also, like, they're my only family, but, like, you got chosen family, bro, it's all good, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So the Order is choosing to break it early because the alternative, quote, is waiting for you know who to come and seize you the moment you turn 17.
It's like being a sitting duck.
Yeah, because he goes on later to say, like, they know the general area of where Harry's home is, so they'd find it pretty quick.
It just is really interesting to me that, I mean, they talk about the fact that it would be foolish for a couple of Death Eaters to, like, not be in the surrounding area, in the air, whatever, right? Why weren't we more ready for a fight? Don't you think, like, you don't know if they're going to see you and go report. You don't know if they're going to come attack you. Like, if you really think that there's at least a couple of them patrolling, why wouldn't you be like, all right, wands out, get ready, we're taking off, like, this is a possibility. Yeah. Like, that kind of annoys me that we weren't ready to cast spells. And, you know, we don't know if we've got a wand in our back pocket possibly blowing off a buttock, you know?
I think that they were probably assuming, like, okay, there's probably one or two people patrolling, but, like, they're going to see this happening and they're going to go and get help, and hopefully by the time they come back, we'll be gone.
But what I'm saying, like, yeah, like, everybody should have had their wand out and at the ready, though.
For sure.
Yeah. Two to three can still kill people, Avi. Like, constant vigilance, right?
Constant vigilance.
That's the one time he didn't say it, and then he dies.
Right. Right. Honestly, though, like, it's like a sacrifice, because who would have died? Because whoever went with Mundungus was going to get left and was going to be more vulnerable. And that's why he chose to go with him, because he wanted to keep an eye on him.
He knew that he was the one to watch, and that was going to be the most dangerous pair.
Yeah. So we know from the first chapter about the false trail that the Order left for the Ministry, but now Mad-Eye is telling it to Harry. So he's like, so Voldemort doesn't know that you're getting moved tonight. False. He does, because of Snape. So Mad-Eye says they think we're waiting until the 30th. But since it's Voldemort that we're dealing with, as we just talked about, we can't rely on him getting the date wrong. He's bound to have a couple Death Eaters patrolling the skies, just in case. Or, you know, they know exactly what's going down, and it's going to be chaos. So there are a dozen different houses with every protection charm you can throw at them. So they all look like someplace that Harry might hide. Which is really creepy, because you know that Voldemort has his people out scouring for this magic to see where he might be. They all have some kind of connection to the Order. Mad-Eye's house, Kingsley's place, Molly's Auntie Muriel's, etc. Harry's still thinking he sees lots of flaws in the plans, but he still politely lets him go on. So Harry's going to be going to the Tonks's parents. And then when he's there, he can take a portkey to the Burrow. And I always forget about this part because of the movies, because it doesn't happen.
Mm.
And it's cool because you get to meet Ted, you get to meet Andromeda, and like Harry has that whole thing where he almost attacks her.
It's fun.
So finally, Mad-Eye's like, do you have any questions? And that's when Harry chimes in and he's like, isn't it like kind of going to be obvious if there's 14 of us flying toward Tonks's parents? I think it's cool that it's two pairs of seven. Not that it really gives them all the luck, but you know, most of them survive.
Maybe that's the luck.
Ah, said Moody. I forgot to mention the key point. 14 of us won't be flying to Tonks's parents. There will be seven 14. Harry Potters moving seven. Through the skies tonight. Each of them with a companion, each pair heading for a different safe house.
Big numbers. It's okay.
Lots of numbers.
You got. Mm-hmm.
So he takes out a flask. Looks like it's full of mud. Harry instantly is like, no way. He knows what the plan is. And Hermione's like, I told them you'd take it like this.
Of course she did.
She says it with a hint of complacency. And I had to look up like, I know what complacent means, but I don't know. It means smug, basically. She's being smug right now.
Yeah. She knows. Like,
yeah.
Called it.
Yeah. Called it. If you think I'm going to let six people risk their lives, Ron chimes in.
Six.
Because it's the first time for all of us.
Wah, wah. Chess match, anyone?
Right?
No, Ron. No, you can't.
Dude, right, that Ron's new, like,
this is old news.
That new video going around on TikTok with like the animated little characters dancing. I don't understand it, but it's really funny.
Oh my god.
I don't think I've seen it.
Are you serious?
I'll look it up.
Someone just, one of our chat groups just sent it not too long ago. I think Carrie sent it. This is different. Pretending to be me. Then Fred. Well, none of us really fancy it, Harry. Imagine if something went wrong and we were stuck as Specky Scrawny Gits forever.
Harry did not smile. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
I loved how the twins acted that out in the film. I thought that this scene was just done really well.
This scene is done super well. Yeah. This part, at least,
it's fun.
Is like,
it's fun to watch.
Pretty spot on.
Dan's acting. Choice.
Oh, yeah. When he plays all of the Potters. Mia just said, Dad crushed the scene.
Yeah.
Anybody else just get, like, stabbed in the heart when, like, anyone who dies later in this book has any sort of speaking role or mention or anything?
Because you're like, it's the last time. It's the last time.
Truly.
Oh, man.
Yep.
Is that all?
Tis all.
Oh my gosh. I know that we probably all know this, but the fake trail that they're talking about is the trail that Yaxley mentions in chapter one.
Right.
And he and Snape have a little bit of a quarrel.
A
little professor quarrel over it. You know?
A quibble.
A quibble. A
quibble. All right. Lori, did you want to add anything that you had in here? No. Let's pull a couple of lightning round questions.
That was lightning.
Thank you.
Twas from good. From the future or something.
Lofty HP asks, what do we think happened to 4 Privet Drive once everyone left?
I think it probably got ransacked.
That's exactly the word I was thinking of.
Yeah,
I was gonna say raided, but like same thing. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
Torn apart.
Yeah,
I mean for anything that was anything they could have presented to Voldemort, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Have fun with my old broken quills.
Right.
Can you find any meaning behind them? Yeah, Vernon's socks in an immaculate kitchen.
Katie K asks, what transportation would you have wanted to use for this travel? Thestral, broom, or motorbike?
Thestral.
Who's driving the motorbike?
Me.
Oh, God, I'm not sitting in that sidecar. No, actually, I might like to be passenger princess to Meg's driving. So I'm going to pick the sidecar to Meg driving the motorbike.
I rode with her on a jet ski once, and let me tell you, it did not end well.
I learned my lesson.
Didn't end well.
I learned my lesson.
Didn't end well twice.
Did you fall off?
I might have flipped it.
Oh, jeez.
But it's okay. I flipped it back over and all was well. Got back on, pulled Katie back on, and we were off.
Just to do it again.
I love it.
I feel like a Thestral would also, like, have the thoughts to, like, dodge.
Mm.
And, like, fly and, like, have its own path that it was, I mean, it doesn't want to die either, you know?
Like how birds are pretty nimble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is an interesting question. Blake asked, wouldn't Dumbledore's house charm break with his death? Like when the body bind curse broke when Harry was on the astronomy tower.
If it's blood stuff, though, Harry's still alive.
Yeah.
If he's messing around with that, you know?
I wonder if it depends on, like, the level of spell. Like, if it's a super intricate spell, is that something that can break upon death? Or is it just, like, small? Because, I mean, a body bind curse is just, like, you know.
Yeah. And is it a spell, like a one-and-done kind of spell of his own creation?
Yeah. Lofty said, too, maybe long-lasting ones stay.
Yeah. You'd figure there'd be magic for that. So if it's not blood, maybe it's something else more intricate.
Yeah.
Because, like, I don't know. I feel like if every spell you ever did broke when you died, like, what if you dropped all your teacups and then you die and they all explode into pieces?
Oh, my God.
So now someone's dead and you have glass to clean up.
Yeah, that's not fun. That's not a fun time. Could you imagine?
Oh, man.
Well.
No.
I
don't know.
Yeah, we're just going to do 3 tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Fan story?
Yeah.
Elizabeth from July 2021.
Oh, wait. Sorry, back what? To people dying and spells. There are still spells on Grimmauld Place that Moody put in. Mm-hmm. So Those are still there.
Maybe it's like a certain level of spell, you know?
It's gotta be.
Yeah. Otherwise, that's silly. Yeah.
The Fidelius charm doesn't necessarily break, as it just transfers power to those that they've said, because you need an alive secret keeper. So I think that that's a little bit of a different example with that.
Oh, and Vinny says sorting hat.
Yeah.
That's all spells. Hogwarts protection. Yeah. Look at us. Jinx, you owe me a summit cola, Vinny.
I thought you were jinxing me, and I was like, fine. And I didn't even question.
You didn't even know.
I didn't even question.
Oh, man. Can I give Elizabeth their dues now?
Yes, yes. Okay. Fan story. Yeah.
Okay. Fan Sorry, story. Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, July 2021. Hello. My name is Elizabeth, and this is my Potter story. I first started reading Harry Potter on my own when I was 7 years old.
You're welcome.
My memories are a little scattered, but I remember quickly enjoying the first book. I was always an avid reader, and I can't remember how many times I read the first two books. I remember reading the first one, then the second one, and then going back to the first one again, and I just kept repeating the cycle. I'm not sure why, as it was 2005 and the first 6 books were released. About a year later, I finally leapt from my comforts of Chamber of Secrets and started Prisoner of Azkaban. Very quickly, I made my way through the series and anxiously awaited the arrival of the 7th book. I distinctly remember being at my grandmother's house and seeing a commercial for the 7th book and being overly excited, which my brother did not understand.
That is really cool.
That is awesome.
I don't
know
if I remember seeing a commercial for the last book.
Me either. And like, think about like,
I don't remember seeing any commercials.
You don't really see commercials for books.
Yeah. For books. Yeah. That's how big this series is, people.
Right? I don't think at that moment in our lives, though, we were really watching that much TV. We were like in college. We didn't have cable. We didn't.
Yeah.
Netflix,
true.
I don't think was a thing.
It was on a DVD if it was.
right.
Getting it in the mail.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's for all you youngins listening. You had to get DVDs through your mail from Netflix. It wasn't on your newfangled smart TV.
And like flipping through your phone wasn't the same then, so it's not like you would come across the commercial.
Oh yeah,
you would just flip. You would flip open your phone. That's it.
Our phones in college were not iPhones.
You're correct.
No,
at least not Blackberries. For all of
Blackberries were really cool because then you could get your email on there.
I had one of those like swivel phones. You swiveled the top and it like flipped up. I thought I was so cool.
Till it broke. Didn't it break?
Yeah, it broke.
Yeah.
And I remember I really wanted a T-Mobile. Oh, God.
You want a sidekick?
A sidekick because Benji Madden had one and I wanted one because he had one.
Remember that video of him playing like a horse sound off his phone? He was like, nah.
Yeah, that was what made me want it.
I know.
Dumb. I was dumb. I admit it.
It's not dumb. Everybody wanted one.
Okay.
I think you're cool. Anyway. I wanted a pink razor and never got one.
Those were the preppy phones.
Chrissy had a razor.
That's why I wanted it.
Chrissy had a razor.
Yeah, she did. Anyway, sorry, Elizabeth.
Elizabeth, I'm sorry!
Thanks for the nostalgia. Very quickly, I became the Harry Potter girl. Any gift I received would be Harry Potter themed, and I loved collecting all the merchandise I could. Even today, I received the most wonderful Harry Potter gifts, as my family knows how much it means to me. Like many readers, I find so much comfort in returning to Hogwarts. I recently completed a reread of the series during the pandemic, and I'm anxious to return again. I have so many memories of playing make-believe with Harry, Ron, and Hermione while watching the movies in my bedroom and exploring the world further through Lego Harry Potter games and toys. I was supposed to get married in May 2020, and we had to postpone our wedding to August. Luckily, we were able to get married in August 2020, but unfortunately, I missed out on my dream, traveling to Harry Potter World in Orlando. My husband and I had purchased tickets, hotels, and everything for our honeymoon when we had to cancel. I hope I can make it there soon, as I have always wanted to go but haven't had the chance yet.
I will tell you, walking around in the heat of Florida in August of 2020, when you had to wear a mask, even outside.
Yeah.
It was something, man.
I hope that you got to come eventually, but that was not the time.
Yeah. I love your podcast so much as I feel like I'm hanging out with great people and I'm right there with you. My favorite book is Chamber of Secrets. My favorite movie is Prisoner of Azkaban. Nice. And I am a Gryffindor.
Yeah, you are.
Thanks for reading. My story seems boring to me, but I imagine others may be able to relate. Thanks for all your hard work on this amazing podcast. Yours, Elizabeth.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
I love it when people thank us for the work.
Thanks for putting up with our shenanigans.
Truly, I want to know if you've been, if you've gotten to go to Orlando and have your honeymoon.
Yes, yeah. I really hope you. When is this from?
21.
21.
Okay.
So maybe.
Elizabeth, are you still here?
Are you still
Do
a
you
listener?
Still like us?
Have you abandoned us by now?
We wouldn't really blame you. We're kind of crazy.
No.
But we hope you're still here now. And tell us, have you gone to Orlando?
Yeah.
Yes. Please.
So thanks for your story, Elizabeth.
Did you have a butterbeer? Did you like it? What was your favorite food?
What was your favorite type of butterbeer?
Was it frozen? And why? Was it ice cream? And why?
I love ice cream so much.
So do I.
Relatable. Relatable.
Lori's quiet for like 10 minutes and all of a sudden ice cream's mentioned.
Yeah.
Her heart.
Tell us a joke, Catherine.
Okay. What holds all of Hermione's books together?
Spellotape.
Spellbinding.
Ooh.
Darn.
Oh, that's cute.
Oh, that's cute. Jinx, yummy coke.
Boo.
If you want to follow myself and Katie, we're on Instagram and TikTok at The Petrus Family. And Tiffany is on Instagram and TikTok at @TiffSwish_flick. Lori, what would you like to plug here for you? Where can people
find
you?
I'm on my website, lorikim.com, LORRIEKIM.
Nice. Is anybody reading anything new? Playing anything new lately? Tiffany. Mm.
Oh, I did read two books.
Two?
Yeah. Well, I mean,
I read Deathly Hallows at
high speed on Audible. No, I did start Deathly Hallows over again. But I read two books. I read Counting the Cost by Jill Duggar.
Oh, me too.
And I read Becoming Free Indeed by Ginger Duggar.
Yeah.
Do you see a pattern?
I have a question for you because I too have read both of those, but I read Ginger's a while ago.
True.
What did you think of Ginger's since you read it after Jill's? What did you think of Ginger's?
Ginger's was very sermon like.
Yeah.
It was very church.
Mm-hmm.
But she did spill some tea, which I appreciated, but it felt very safe.
Yeah.
And it wasn't necessarily family tea. It was Bill Gothard tea.
Yes.
It was very anti-Gothard, which rightfully so.
Yep.
Terrible person. You can at me if you want, but you'll get blocked if you think Bill Gothard's a nice man. Don't let the door hit you on the way out. But yeah, as a Christian woman myself, I'm not into any of that. So yeah, definitely. What did I find more interesting and learn from more? Probably Jill's, as far as the family goes. And
she talks about
Happy
Gothard
People
too.
Yeah, Shiny Happy People was a very interesting documentary. I don't want to call it good because I don't think that's the word for it. It's very well shot and put together.
Eye-opening.
Eye-opening, lots of information. And I think there will probably be more. We'll see what they do. But I think that it's very important, and I say this as a Christian person, it's very important in this day and age to separate extremists from regular everyday people.
Yeah.
Because what some people see as Christianity, I see as not.
Yeah.
Christianity is literally following Christ, aka Jesus, and the people who are, I mean, this is getting preachy, I guess, but like people who hate on groups of people, that's not Christ-like. So I don't think that you should put that label on yourself, because it makes everybody else who is loving and kind and accepting of all, it puts us in a box. And I don't want to be in your box. And that's all I'll say.
Yeah.
I also believe in evolution, so that makes me kind of a weird Christian.
Hey, you don't have to put a label on what you are either. You know, you just believe what you believe. You know?
I more closely like resonate with Jesuit Catholics. So.
Yeah.
And science is science, baby.
Science is science.
Okay, I'm getting confirmation that it's not weird to like believe in science and also be Christian. Thank you, because sometimes I feel like I am like, what? Yeah. Okay.
I too read Jill's book. Like I said, I read Ginger's a while ago, and Ginger's just to me felt very safe. And Ginger's was also, I mean, okay. Ginger went from one cult to another.
Yeah.
If I'm being honest. She has not fully, what is the term she likes to use in that?
Disentangled
herself. She has not. That was like, whatever. I mean,
it's
okay.
It's the judging for me. Yeah,
Some of the stuff in her book still was eye-opening. She did talk a lot about Gothard, a little about her family. Jill talked about her family. And let me tell you. This is kind of one of my like weird obsessions. The Duggar family is a weird obsession of mine. I just like, I watched that show when I was younger, when it was on TLC. Like, I just loved it. And I also just am obsessed with shows where there's like a lot of weddings and babies. Like, it's just, it's good entertainment for me. And when there's 19 kids and then they're getting older, there's a lot of weddings and babies. So I was all about it. So, you know, you don't, when I was younger and you're watching it, you have no freaking idea what you're watching, right? You're just like watching this family and I'm excited that they're going wedding dress shopping or whatever.
You're like, so cute. I can't.
That
stand
was
it.
What I liked. So because I was really into it, and I just, you know, there are certain ones that you're like, you feel like you connect with them, and then you grow older and you realize their beliefs and what they are and what they're preaching and what they're, you know, as Jim Bob said, their ministry was to show this to millions of people and try to get millions of people to come and follow the Institute of Basic, what is it? Institute of Basic IBLP. Life Principles.
Yeah.
He is a piece of freaking work. And that, I mean, I feel for Jill. I feel like she's been torn from her family. She's been kept from her family for absolutely no reason other than her dad is just a big old jerk who wants control and can feel it
and
slipping.
Money.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, anyway, if any of that resonated with you, I recommend her book. It was good. It was a quick read. I really liked the Audible version of it because Jill read it. And I like that. So I also finished some fun books that were not biographies, that are just smutty romance novels that were fantastic. And if that's more your jam, I just want to give a shout out to Rachel Lynn Solomon, because she's becoming one of my top five authors. She now is officially an auto buy for me. She writes a book, I'm buying it because I know I'm going to like it. I love how she writes. I finished her book, The X Talk, last week. So good. And now I'm reading Yours Truly by Abby, I think you pronounce her last name, Jimenez. Freaking good. Just, it's a really good, like, haters to lovers, enemies to lovers. That's what the phrase
haters
is.
Haters to lovers.
It's a really good enemies to lovers romance with a little bit of forced dating, close, forced close proximity. Just good. So, yeah.
Nice. Oh, my turn. I actually finally picked up Empire of Storms. And I am reading it.
She's almost halfway through.
I'm 40% through. And I was actually like last night, I was sad I couldn't read because you're doing other things that were fun and it was great. But I was like, man, I just really want to read. So I'm back on the book wagon, which is nice. And I beat Pokemon Violet, at least like the main storylines. And now I feel a little lost.
Woo.
Yeah. Feel a little bit lost. But it's fine.
Lori, have you read or watched anything recently that you would like to talk
about? I have started reading The Murder of Mr. Wickham. It's by Claudia Gray, and it's a Jane Austen pastiche where all the characters from Austen's novels get together and one of them has killed Mr. Wickham, who is horrible, and everybody has a reason to kill him, and I've just started, so I don't know, but it's good so far.
Nice.
All right.
Nice.
That's awesome. So we did not get a bingo, unfortunately. And the House Cup standings are Birds are in first.
No!
15 points.
Look at those. Look at those.
Oh my gosh. Gryffindor is in second. Hufflepuff is third.
By four point difference.
Wait. Is that, are the trivia points in there?
Yeah.
Nice.
And Slytherin is fourth.
It didn't.
Dude.
Wow.
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 Interesting.
Okay. We need another trivia, Katie.
Yeah, that's soon, what the trivia my friend. Pretty nuts.
Dang. All right. Well, keep showing up for the recordings, Gryffindor. It's helping. Oh, man.
All right, Tiff.
Okay, guys. This one's for Privet Drive.
Peace out,
Pour one out! Oh, that concludes this week's episode. Thank you so much for listening, and don't let the muggles get you down.
Amazing! Just my voice!
Hello, and welcome to episode 100... Or no.
What?
If soda wins, you're all wrong.
The only other term for pop I'll accept is fizzy drink. That's it.
Who says fizzy drink?
Fizzy drink is cute.
Yeah.
But that sounds like something that they would say in England.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.